This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on October 4th, 2012. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Open session. It's back in session. We will now consider Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on RightMarch.com PAC A09-25.
Hi. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, all. Before you is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on RightMarch.com PAC Inc., which recommends you approve the three findings as presented in the draft final audit report. For the first finding, misstatement of financial activity, the committee has not amended its reports to correct the misstatements. For the second finding, extension of credit by a commercial vendor, the draft audit final audit report notes that the commercial vendor did not make an impermissible extension of credit to the committee. However, the committee continues to dispute the need to disclose debts arising from the weekly invoices. For the third finding, failure to file notices and properly disclose independent expenditures in response to the DFAR, the committee stated that it has disputed this issue throughout the audit process, including a request for early consideration by the committee commission, and we are prepared to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Any comments? Commissioner McGinn?
The failure to disclose debt issue, I don't agree on that one. The committee's response, I think, answers the question. The issue is whether these weekly statements that were provided were actually something that looked more like invoices that then created debt, or are they, as the committee says, they specify the maximum possible amount that political advertising could receive from Right March for its services if the fundraising program was particularly successful. Part of this comes from my own experience. To me, this is essentially a weekly or a periodic status report letting you know how the prospecting is doing. It doesn't create debt because it's all contingent upon other terms in the contract. And to me, the way I read this sort of deal, this is not something that causes debt, at least reportable debt, to occur. And really, for the reasons that the committee through counsel gives, that's why I think the finding. I can't support that part of the finding. Before we go to other parts of the audit, maybe I'll yield back and see if anyone else has thoughts on that point. So we keep it kind of in order.
Any other thoughts on that point, Commissioner Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I share the same concerns. In this particular, we in the report, we accept the. It appears the auditors accept the argument that this was, the way that they do business in this sort of an arrangement. That this was not a contract that was unusual. That this was typical in the field, and. If this truly were a situation where we had debt, it would seem in that case that the vendor would be the one saying, "You owe me a lot of money." But they're the ones saying that this is, Commissioner McGann said, that these were just statements that they said were otherwise misleading because all they were saying was that they represented the maximum possible amounts that PA, which was the vendor, could earn if the telemarketing campaign were exceptionally successful. So to then use those amounts as the amount and subtract from that the amount that was actually paid by Right March, I think leads to a pretty misleading number, or a number that doesn't really have a great deal of meaning. So I agree. I can't support this finding either. I think that what both the vendor and the what the audited committee here, Right March, the information they set forward, I find persuasive that this wasn't a no-risk contract. They set forth information, the vendor does, that this was a profitable contract for them, both in terms of actual money that they made from it, and also in terms of the value of the names that they were able to obtain through the course of the contract as well. So with regard to the second finding, I too am not going to be able to support it.
Commissioner Walther?
I'd be interested in the staff comments on the issue raised so far on the debt issue. As the contract progressed, was it more and more likely that the debt was being incurred because, in fact, there was, you know, it's being made? How did you view that?
We considered the documentation that we had similar to invoices and calculated the debt that way. And this is consistent with previous treatment of similar debt issue, for instance, like in CLPAC in the past. So we've approached this issue the same way before.
And can you kind of fill me in on that previous precedent?
On CLPAC?
I mean, I would also add that, you know, when we took the weekly statements and considered them invoices, we did with what we do with any other debt and considered them to be reportable as of the time that the reports were due, as of that time period. The regulations also allow for a committee to estimate the debts, even if the amount of debt is disputed or whatnot. So, I mean, that was kind of our thought process.
I gather you could report contingent or something like that, a contingent debt based upon other things. Do you require that sometimes or recommend it?
I mean, I think the regulations stipulate just estimated debts. So whether that's contingent on activity, other things happening, I think that's up for interpretation. But it does allow for estimating debts and putting those on your scheduled day.
I guess the question is if there's a potential increase in a debt, but it may not be. What do you recommend they put when it is truly contingent or something along that line?
Yeah, that you could put.
It could be misleading too, to unless you had some kind of qualifying language.
Oh, I think there's room on the reports to do something like that. Sure.
Commissioner McGann?
Steve's done.
I'm not sure if you're... Okay.
CLPAC case, I think, was a no-risk contract. I think that's distinguishable here. I'm not sure the precedent actually says this result is preordained. I think there's plenty of other precedent that goes the other way. Some of it was on split votes. Some, I think, had not split votes on these sorts of contracts. And there certainly is that one MER with a penalty that was paid, but that was a no-risk contract. You had a vendor essentially fronting a lot of money for a program that really they shouldn't have been doing, which is different than this contract. And I think this contract is much more in line with the sort of thing that is okay and I think addresses the concerns raised in the – if we're assuming we're talking about the same case. I don't remember the respondent. I'm assuming it's the same body of precedent. If it is contingent debt, that doesn't have to be reported. What has to be reported is debt or estimated debt, but that presupposes there's a debt under this contract. It's not a debt. It's you don't have to report what might be a debt someday. It's debt, and whether you know the amount or not is then the question. If you know the amount, you report the debt. If you don't, you estimate it because you know you owe somebody something. Here, that's not the case. This is distinguishable from that, and I don't see how you could do something on the reports that's not required by the rule, because it actually is, as Commissioner Walther sort of alludes to, ends up being confusing if you're showing contingent debt that's not really debt. I mean, it's tough enough to estimate, but that, again, assumes that there's debt. So the point Commissioner Walther's making, I think, is if I'm hearing it right, is spot on, and it really turns on, to me, what the contract says, and I think under this contract, this wasn't debt. Now, you think these look like invoices. They sort of look like invoices, but once you look at the contract and go through it from my perspective, they're not invoices. They're more like status reports, so you know what's going on. That's not the same as debt. Potentially, it could become debt someday if a bunch of things happen, but under contract law, that's not that's not debt. That's all contingencies, and until it's debt, you don't have to report it.
Mr. Calvert.
Thank you. I did just want to point out in response to Commissioner McGann that, and my colleagues in the audit division can correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I believe I remember this, that this was actually described in the text of the contract itself as a no-risk guarantee. And the difficult thing about this in terms of the reporting is that in the relevant precedent, there have been some of these arrangements that have been disapproved. There's some of them that have been approved, but we've always treated them as extensions of credit. And extensions of credit, I think in every instance I'm aware of, has meant that you've got to report something. The theoretical basis for why they didn't have to report anything is that they didn't owe anything. And if they didn't owe anything and weren't ever going to owe anything, then you kind of get back into the loop of, well, how is this not a contribution because you're providing a whole lot of services for this committee and not ever going to charge them anything for it? We treated this, or in our analysis, consistent with the previous MERS, treated this essentially as an extension of credit that was repaid. It had a number of safeguards, which some of the previous precedent talks about. This is one of the few times we've had somebody in one of these cases present a record of similar practices in the industry. But ultimately, it paid for itself, and under CLPAC and some of the other precedents, if it hadn't paid for itself, I think we might be in a different position.
Mr. Bonowitz?
I just want to add that the contract itself seems to describe this weekly document as an invoice, because it states in the contract that the cost of production, stationery, and some other costs, as well as the cost of renting and improvising list, shall be added to the contingency fee stated on the weekly invoice. And that's in the contract.
It's still a contingency fee, though. Right. If I could. If you actually look at the contract, it's called an invoice as shorthand for statement of contingency fees. So they do use the term invoice, but that's as a shorthand to make the contract easier to read. Again, I think it turns on the contract, and the way I read this contract, it's not a no risk. If it didn't work, I mean, it did pay for itself, which I think is different than what I think of as a no risk contract.
Any other questions or comments? Commissioner Walther?
Would it be then correct to say this would be really a case of first impression? Or suppose we were to say this is a contingency contract, and I'd like to take another look at it because I really wasn't focusing quite on that at the time or how it came about, but do you have any? I see in here you cite MER 5069 and 5132. Again, I haven't looked at those, so
those are in
was there a situation where it's contingent, but because of the lapse of time, some of it is becoming true debt and some of it's still contingent? In other words, certain facts occur to the point where part of the amount that's contingent no longer is, but some still is. How would it work? I mean, just whatever your analysis might be on that.
I'll take a stab at that. I think at this point in time, and we don't have information from the committee, and Rhonda can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the contract ran through the middle of 2012.
August 15th.
So the contract may, in fact, have ended, and based on that and the situation, they may not be required to report debt at that point, according to the contract. So, but I don't have any information. I'm just speculating. They haven't reported debt. They stopped reporting the debt the end of 2012. They did stop reporting all debt on their disclosure reports. I'm sorry, 2008. Starting 2009, they dropped the reporting of all debt.
Mr. Calvert?
Madam Chair, Ms. Foreman has some information about relevant precedent that may go to Commissioner Walther's concern.
One of the concerns, I guess, that was raised, I believe, by Commissioner Walther was whether we have precedent in other MERS or other matters that addressed what could be considered contingent debt or a debt that may or may not occur. We do have a situation, and we did cite it in our comments regarding MER 4742, Juan Vargas for Congress, and in that particular matter, the committee would pay a portion of what they owed, and then the rest would be considered deferred compensation. A portion of that deferred compensation that both parties agreed would be payable only if both parties agreed that the committee could afford to pay it at a later time.
That's still a debt.
Ultimately, the commission decided not to pursue it as an in-kind contribution, but decided that it was a reportable debt.
I could see if that particular contingency is not the kind I'm thinking of, where, oh, well, I can't pay it, therefore it was contingent all the way along. It's if it's if they can afford it, then it's a legal document. But that I'm thinking more in terms of something that's the contingency is not in the control of the people who actually for whom it's contingent. But I'm just trying to
I suppose
get
one example that
analysis thought through.
I suppose one example, this may or may not be what you were considering, but there's also an advisory opinion, the Calvert advisory opinion that we also cite in our analysis, in which it involved a disputed debt, so it's a slightly different circumstances, but that would be a situation where it was out of the committee's control to a certain extent. They still were required to report the outstanding debt until finally the commission in the advisory opinion advised them that they could report the amount that was in dispute. They finally let them off the hook, that they were required to report it until that point in time.
But it's fairly clear that if there's a dispute, then you have to report it, don't you think? I mean, at least you have a party who's contending it's a legal obligation. And at that point, it seems to me, presently, a legal obligation. At that point, it seems to me that would our law is fairly clear now on that. No, maybe not.
The way we interpreted this was that basically there was an extension of credit. The extension of credit is reportable as a debt, and that until the debt is no longer there, and that in this particular case, if the committee could not. If they were not uncertain of the exact amount they were required to estimate, which is also a requirement of the regulations, we would interpret that the estimated amount is the full amount that was disclosed on these weekly invoices, and that once it came to a point where it became profitable to cover all of these contingent debts, as some is referred to, the contingency fee as it's referred in the contract, then the committee would be able to either go back and amend the report under the regulations or file appropriate reports at that time disclosing that situation. The same goes when the contract terminated in August 2012.
Any other questions or comments? I believe Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question on finding three as well. For clarification, this group, it sounds like, originally before they had counsel on board, reported almost all of these communications that are at issue as independent expenditures, and that the problem was that they were using the payment date rather than the dissemination date as the date for reporting those on their quarterly reports. They did have some problems with 24 and 48 hour reports, but in terms of that these things were disclosed as IEs on the regular quarterly reports with an improper date of dissemination, but that as we got into the audit, once they were represented by counsel, they made the argument that those shouldn't have been reported as IEs in the first place because these were solicitations. They weren't. They didn't actually qualify as IEs. Is that a correct summation of where they are?
That's correct.
Okay. Is there any indication that were there any things that were not reported as IEs that the auditors determined should have been reported as independent expenditures?
In the report, the only other thing we note relative to reporting independent expenditures is that that they should have reported some of those as debts, and then memo schedules. They didn't do that.
Which arises from the fact that they were using the wrong date, since they were reporting them as pursuant to the date of payment rather than date of dissemination, they weren't disclosing them early enough, and that's where the problem arose, right?
The weekly invoice fees.
As far as the 24 and 48 hour notices, I think the problem really boiled down to September of 2007 because of the problem with the dissemination dates not being used, but the payment date being used by the committee. Is that correct?
Yes. For the notices, right.
Okay. So then it really comes down to, our argument is you reported them correctly, that the auditor's argument is that you reported them correctly just in terms of that you reported them, you categorized them correctly as independent expenditures, but you reported them incorrectly in terms of the dates used and that kind of cascaded into debt reporting issues and memo entries and all that. They come back and say, yeah, we reported them incorrectly. They concede that, but for different reasons. We reported them incorrectly because they should have been considered operating expenditures because these were solicitation communications, not actual express advocacy communications. Okay. And which then, I guess, leads us into an issue that the commission really does have to resolve, which is whether or not these were the scripts were express advocacy. And these sorts of communications are oftentimes pretty tricky. I mean, when are these primarily solicitations? Are these looking for money, or are these advocacy pieces? And I think we've talked in the past, and I've expressed in the past that a solicitation can't necessarily inoculate itself from being an IE just by merely putting you could have a pure express advocacy piece, and then at the end, and please send us money, and then say and then take that out of the independent expenditure realm. But on the other hand, when a piece is really about give me money and we want to spend money for a variety of different things, and especially in a case like this where it appears that the pieces were and from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the vast majority of these communications were made in 2007?
Correct.
Okay. I believe that counsel said that 93% of the calling scripts were used in 2007. The issue, the subject of these scripts was the issue of immigration policy, and focuses on that, asks for money repeatedly, and then at the end ask a listener to tell friends to oppose Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or both or one or the other. And then what do we do with that? I think it is useful to, and they claim that, you know, that they never refer to any candidacy, that these were done well away from any elections. And so we're left to wonder, what does oppose mean? Now, oppose can be a magic word, but you also have to look at the internal context of the actual communication. What are they asking you to oppose? Are they asking you to oppose an election, or is the communication asking you to oppose the policy efforts of particular individuals? This was certainly a live issue in 2007 and 2008. In 2007, there was a vote on President George Bush's immigration bill in June of that year. And then there were also subsequent votes regarding the DREAM Act in October of 2007. And then early in 2008, there were votes on employer sanctions. And I believe that there was another vote on expanding the construction of a fence along the southern border of the United States. So this was a very hot issue at the time, and there was a lot of legislative activity going on in Congress. And in light of that, that's if we want to peek outside the context of the four corners of the actual communication, which I don't think is necessary in this case, but it's to the extent we want to, that is relevant context. But I think that in the communication itself, they certainly flirt with the line, and you know, the oppose language with respect to Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, certainly the most reasonable interpretation, you know, may be that it was that it was to oppose their candidacies, to defeat their candidacies. But I'm not sure that that's the only reasonable interpretation. I think that when you look at it in the context, the internal context of the communication itself, it could also be read to say to oppose the efforts of those particular lawmakers. And for that reason, I'm not sure that they're wrong in saying that these really were fundraising pieces, and they were fundraising pieces that were issue-centered. They certainly, I will not disagree that these don't flirt dangerously close to the line, and they do use words that are in 100.22a, but I don't think that that's the end of the analysis, because those words can often be used in ways like, especially support and oppose, that can mean something other than support or oppose someone for election, or oppose that person for election, that it can mean something very different if the overall piece of the communication is a legislative piece and talking about an issue such as illegal immigration. So I think there is another read of this that can, again, it may not be the most reasonable ad, but the most reasonable read, but that's not what the that's not how the regulation governs this sort of a situation. It governs whether or not there is a reasonable alternative read of these ads, and I think that there is.
Madam Vice Chair.
Seriously. We're looking at ads that say, scripts that say, "We're working to defeat politicians like Hillary Clinton. Please tell your friends to oppose Hillary Clinton." How could they possibly make it more explicit? How do you defeat politicians like Hillary Clinton other than? It doesn't say we're working to defeat her policies. It says we're working to defeat politicians like Hillary Clinton. You really got to I don't think it can be done, honestly. I do not think there's a credible argument for that language that it is anything but express advocacy. You know, when you're in the words that are literally in 100.22a and that's not good enough for you, is there another construction of vote for? Does it have to say vote? That's not what the regulation says. I just think you're like, you're just beyond any reasonable interpretation here. I mean, you know, you want to vote that way, fine, but I'm not seeing it.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's change the context. What if this is a piece that is sent out, or a communication that is sent out a month after the election? Still express advocacy? There's no possible. I mean, here we are. This was well over a year before an election. Support or oppose can't have any other meaning in a particular context than support or oppose somebody for election when there's nothing else in here that signals candidacy, that signals upcoming elections. If this is a month after an election, there's no other way to read that.
We're working to defeat politicians like Hillary Clinton? No, I don't think there's any other way to read that. People are constantly running for re-election. You know, your friends in the House would tell you they're always in cycle.
Sure.
Any other questions or comments? I believe that Commissioner McGann has a motion to remove certain portions, but wanted to ask if there was another motion first.
There is, Madam Chair. I move approval of the Audit Division recommendation set forth in the memorandum on rightmarch.com, PAC A09-25, Agenda Document 12-65.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No.
I haven't voted on it. I support the motion, except I would like to read a little more about the contingency fee. Some of those were, that's the only thing I'd like to read. I mean, I don't know if we want to segregate it or get these votes out of the way, and that's fine with me. I support the rest of the recommendation. So, thank you. Do you want to sever it or can move this thing along? But I just have... looking at it, I haven't looked at those supporting MERS and stuff, too.
And that issue is in finding two. So perhaps...
One and three, yes.
So perhaps you'd be willing to... Or we could just vote on this and then have a follow-up one with just one and three. Okay. So all those in favor... Let's just start over. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
For one and three.
No, this one's for the whole thing.
There's the whole thing. We'll have another one.
We'll have another one for you.
All right. I'll oppose it for the moment.
Okay. And so that would be all those in favor, all those no is four. So the motion fails 2-4. Is there another motion? Madam Vice Chair?
I move approval of findings 1 and 3 in Agenda Document 12-65.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion fails 3-3. Is there another motion? Commissioner McCann.
I move that the commission approve finding 1 and the appropriate motion is a move finding 3 to other issues and make any edits to conform that with that disposition.
And not address finding 2 in your motion?
No, I thought we're leaving that for another day,
right? Just
later.
I think that's right. I just wanted
my
to make
concerns
sure.
1 and 3.
Yeah. Question.
Madam Vice Chair.
I'm wondering if what we're doing makes sense because we're not going to be able to resolve it. And we're going to have to come back to this anyway.
Right.
So, I mean, we could. I'm just not sure what we're accomplishing here.
We're trying to move all findings except for finding 2. For now, and then we just have to deal with finding 2 later.
Another procedural question?
Yes.
We don't actually have to vote on finding 3 anymore. If it's split, it's split. It goes to additional issues under 7.
That's true. 70. That's a good point.
So, it seems to me if there's but I agree with the Vice Chair. It seems procedurally, if we have to hold this over to another open meeting, then perhaps we should, if we tried to move the whole document, that didn't work. If there are other motions, you might want to find out where they might go, if they're going to split or if they're not, before we start taking votes on the other pieces.
Is it possible to understand that it would either be 4-2 or 3-3 and then maybe have a tally vote at some point? Meaning that we wouldn't have to hold it to a meeting if I wanted to send in a vote one way or the other. I mean, I don't know how you want to do it.
Could, or
I'm not sure that.
You know, we may want to still talk about it in the open meeting. It's an audit. We may have to, and, you know, I may want to keep working on you. In the open meeting. But, I mean, it's not a preordained conclusion on where we are in two, because you want to read the contract and look at the details, and that's great, because this turns on what the contract says. You know, maybe it says what... Maybe it doesn't say what I think it says, but maybe it says something that gets you thinking it's different than other MERS. So that's, I mean, it's not easy stuff, but maybe the real question, why are we moving part of it if we know we're going to move the rest later anyway? I don't know. Why are we doing that?
Well, we held over the other audit, so let's hold over this one as well and discuss it at the next meeting. All righty.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Are we going to leave Commissioner McGann's motion on the table?
Do you want to withdraw your motion for now?
No.
Okay, then yes.
It gives us a place to start the
there
next meeting, right?
Yeah.
So we don't get up here and fumble around. We need to at least know what's on the table.
Just a procedural question. Can we adjourn a meeting with a motion pending? I'm not sure we can.
I've not got my sources of information here with me, but I don't think it's I'm not sure that it's necessarily a problem. The motion would be the pending business when the matter was returned to.
Or when the meeting.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. I think it's improperly a motion to table.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't want to make it easy and withdraw the motion, because we know we're going to vote on finding one at some point and agree on that. So.
The motion is withdrawn.
Just keep this simple.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. All righty.